Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Our guests this time are Kevin Murray of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee and Diane Forsetta, a senior researcher at the Center for Media and Democracy.
And his interpreter said, those are tapes and DVDs of torture sessions, and there were tens of thousands of sessions.
We look at Karl Rove's bizarre comments on torture tapes in Iraq, the Bush administration's war on bad press, and a new report about faux news, commercials being inserted into mainstream network and affiliate news without notice to the public as to what they really are. With the naming of conservative radio and TV show host Fox Network's Tony Snow as White House press secretary, the Bush administration has taken yet another step in the direction of setting up what can only be called an official U.S. propaganda office. We are watching a continued buildup in what has been called a war on bad press. And in terms of Karl Rove, we've been seeing distinct reminders lately of the kinds of methods that were used prior to the U.S. invasion of Iraq in late 2002 and early 2003. In a speech in Houston, April 12, 2006, Karl Rove told a story about torture tapes reportedly seen by former New York City police chief Bernie Kerik when Kerik was in Baghdad briefly in 2003, training Iraqi police. The story from the controversial Bernie Kerik was also used by Vice President Dick Cheney when Cheney was trying to justify the invasion by listing whatever documentation he could find of Iraqi weapons programs. First, we will listen to the Rove segment, and then Kevin Murray, Director of Communications and Advocacy at the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, will help us try to make sense of it all as we raise questions about what Rove is saying and why. The Unitarian Universalist Service Committee is a member of the National Religious Campaign Against Torture.
It's really hard for us to understand the barbarism that we find in Afghanistan and Iraq. A totalitarian regime that exalts in the complete absence of personal freedom, the complete oppression of women, the total control of thought and action, and the routine, everyday, constant use of torture and violence on a massive scale that a sophisticated and civilized mind finds very hard to accept. I remember sitting in my office on the second floor of the West Wing with Bernie Kerik, tough guy. Grew up on the wrong side of the tracks in New York. His life was saved by becoming a cop. He told me he thought he had seen every form of violence that one human being could commit on another human being until he went to Baghdad, where he went to train the Iraqi police. And he said he had cases, metal cabinets in his office full of videotapes and DVDs. And he said, "What are those?" And his interpreter said, "Those are tapes and DVDs of torture sessions, and there were tens of thousands of sessions captured on tape." He took a look at some of them and said he was so revolted that he could not watch them any further, and he could not stop from weeping. From the violence committed on children in front of their parents, husbands and wives in front of their spouses, and torture that is just impossible for us to understand. Faced with an attack from an ideological enemy of this sort, this president made a decision, grounded in the understanding that we face a different challenge at a different time. In this new century, we cannot and must not wait until we're attacked again. We must confront the mortal danger we face and stay on the offense. We must confront nations who harbor terrorists and treat them the same way we treat terrorists themselves. The president articulated a new doctrine when he said, if you train a terrorist, harbor a terrorist, feed a terrorist, fund a terrorist, you're just as bad as the terrorists themselves, and we will defend our freedom by taking action against you. It is the way we must act in this new century.
Kevin Murray, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Great to be here.
We've listened to this segment of Karl Rove talking about Bernie Kerik and those tapes of torture, and it's quite shocking. But it also raises many, many questions. Where are those tapes? Whatever became of this amazing encounter that Bernie Kerik had with torture being committed in Iraq before we ever got there, I'm presuming?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. I'd need to look in again more into the details of what the situation was and the exact time that Bernie Kerik had this experience, if it really did happen. But Certainly, Rove is referring to tapes of things that happened before the United States was directly involved in Iraq.
Why is he bringing this up? Because it sounds to me like he is trying to use this horror as a way to legitimize the invasion.
Yeah, I think they're still, you know, having lost all of the other arguments, I think they're coming back to something that they believe may have some substance to it. We'd have to see the tapes and know what the real evidence was to know if there's something real in what he's talking here. But I think it is pretty widely accepted that there was a lot of torture and mistreatment of people under Saddam Hussein. So that's a justification that he's coming back to for the war effort, one that's increasingly unpopular with the people in this country. The administration still maintains that it's not systematically using torture in Iraq or elsewhere. And I think against all evidence, it's maintaining that. And I think he's still spinning that idea with what he's saying. Subliminally, he's distancing us from these horrible people that were doing this torture that required that we intervene militarily, preemptively.
He's using the argument that their barbarism was so terrible that ours was perhaps not so bad?
Yeah, or is maybe doesn't even deserve to be called barbarism in what he's saying. And, you know, you'd have to hear the whole speech to know where he took it from there. But I think that's at least a piece of what he's trying to do is continue to make that argument that what we're doing is, number one, justified by the horrors of what came before. And number two, probably not as bad as this horrible stuff that he heard Bernie Kerik from the other side of the tracks describe. You know, I think for us as a faith-based organization working on torture issues, that whole sort of twist or spin of the story, to the extent that it in any ways justifies what are clearly policies that are leading to torture in Iraq and around the world, that's abhorrent. It's terrible for us as a faith-based organization to hear that. Use of this kind of information to, I think, condone something that by any standard, religious or otherwise, is just simply unacceptable.
Kevin Murray is Director of Communications and Advocacy at the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. The group is a member of the National Religious Campaign Against Torture. Just as we have seen a decrease in honesty in public reports from the White House, military, and State Department, we have also seen a decrease in honesty at major television corporations. They now rely on faux news videos, according to Diane Farsetta, a senior researcher at the Center for Media and Democracy. She joins us next to talk about the results of a 10-month intensive study with research consultant Daniel Price, showing how television stations use these VNRs, or mini news commercials, without telling viewers what they are, who made them, or what they were intended to do, which is influence consumer decision-making, just like commercials do. Diane Farsetta, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks for having me on.
Describe what you have discovered.
We looked at three different public relations firms that specialize in putting out broadcast material, so in this case, video materials, and a particular product called a video news release. And what these video news releases, or VNRs, are segments that are designed to look exactly like independently reported TV news segments. They're given to television newsrooms, and they're promoted to TV newsrooms, and those newsrooms often air these segments as though they were part of their news programs, as though their local reporters had produced these and filmed these. But what we found is that these segments were being funded by and scripted on behalf of major corporations like Pfizer, Capital One Bank, or Panasonic, all sorts of different, especially health and consumer products companies were funding these. And basically what TV newsrooms are doing is allowing these segments that are little better than ads to be portrayed as though they were news reports. I mean, there have been so many different studies of television news. There were two that we cited in the report that I think are relevant here. One is that there was a study of health news just on local TV stations that found that the information was poor, it was often wrong, and it was sometimes misleading in a dangerous way. You know, in some of the examples that we have in our report with the video news releases coming from health companies are dealing with prescription strength medications where all of the risk information was removed. So you had, you know, this totally unbalanced promotional segment going out and being presented as news.
So we're going along watching the news, and it's about Iraq or Iran or the White House, or perhaps a cat that got caught in a building in New York. And all at once, the piece of video comes on as if it were news, something like that, right?
Right, right. And a lot of times, I mean, we saw, especially I would say the health and consumer-based segments often are these things. And it's a very subtle product placement, but it's there. You know, the public relations firms that deal in these video news releases have gotten very good about having a clear sort of promotional angle to it, but one that isn't too obvious, that would turn off, you know, TV newsrooms from actually airing these. So they do get aired, you know, and much more often than we thought, starting when we started this research. And also, you know, the entire prepackaged segment, there's generally two parts to a video news release that's put out by a PR firm. One is this prepackaged segment that's got a publicist narrating the piece as though he or she were a reporter. And then there's additional video at the end called B-roll. But what we saw is that over one-third of the times that we saw these VNRs being aired, it was just that entire prepackaged segment put on the air by TV newsrooms with no edits. Oftentimes, they didn't even bother to voice over the publicist. So you had a publicist for hire being introduced by local TV stations as though they were a local reporter.
There's a profit factor here. Why don't you talk about how that works?
Obviously, in the terms of the companies that are paying for these, this is great. This is much better than advertising for them, because if it's an obvious advertisement, if it's, you know, the 30-second ad on your TV screen or an ad that appears in your magazines or your newspapers, you obviously know where it's coming from, and you know that it hasn't been fact-checked, and you know that the company has paid for that ad in order to persuade you to usually buy their product or buy their services or something. So if you see a supposedly independent news reporter saying, yes, you know, you should get your child tested for allergies with this new blood test, you're going to give that much more credence than you would if you saw it as the 30-second ad or, you know, the ad in your newspaper or magazine. And I would say that the second kind of financial pressure that's at play here is the downsizing of television newsrooms, so that you have most TV stations not being able to fill up their news programming time with actual news programs. So you have these TV stations that are much more receptive to just putting on air, you know, not fact-checked, as we documented, not edited even, and often more than 90% of the time that we saw, not even balanced with any independently gathered footage or information, these messages that come from PR firms.
You at the Center for Media and Democracy, as well as the Free Press, have gone after these people by filing a formal complaint with the Federal Communications Commission. And also, you have been appearing in some of the alternative, the great alternative press and Democracy Now! I saw you interviewed by Amy Goodman, you along with the co-author of this report, Daniel Price. Just talk about the process of filing against this sort of monolithic entity of all of these mainstream press outlets, and then also of what has happened since this has come out.
There are laws on the books that might have been broken. When there is a financial interest, when you have somebody paying to provide video footage to a TV station, the TV station has an obligation to disclose to its viewers, this segment is courtesy of Pfizer or courtesy of Siemens, courtesy of Daimler Chrysler, whoever funded that segment, there needs to be disclosure to the news audience. We didn't find one instance in 98 different times of when these materials were being aired. Not once did the TV station disclose to the viewers, this is courtesy of this corporation. So right there, we have probable infractions of current FCC law. And we're very fortunate to have, through our colleagues at Free Press, which is a national media reform organization, to be able to have contacted the Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein, who's very strong on this issue, who's very concerned about and really pointed to, you know, the public interest aspects of the licenses that broadcasters are given, the fact that these TV stations are supposed to be serving local interests. That's why they're allowed to use the local airwaves. They're not supposed to be dressing up ads and passing them off, you know, deceptively as their own journalistic product. So we presented our findings to Commissioner Adelstein. He was generous enough to come on Democracy Now! With us, to actually be with us at the press conference that we had in Washington, D.C., announcing the release of the report. He's referring our findings to the Enforcement Bureau of the FCC, and he's also said that there might be a need for strengthening even the current disclosure requirements. So I would say that's in terms of the FCC, and also to say if your listeners are concerned, if they don't want to be hoodwinked by their local TV stations, I would encourage them to both look at our report on prwatch.org, and there's a link also to the Free Press website, which is freepress.net, where you can send a message to the FCC about this issue. It has been also really interesting to look at the media coverage of our report. It's been, in and of itself, very, very enlightening, I would say. And also to see the responses of the TV stations. As you said, as far as media coverage, it has been a lot of very good, strong, alternative, independent media, publicly funded media, community funded media that have been covering this. We have also gotten good print coverage of this, but TV coverage, as you might expect, has been pretty low. And one thing that I'm working on right now in terms of a follow-up to the report is a compilation of the responses that we've gotten from the different television stations that we caught airing this fake news to their viewers without disclosure. And it's quite sad, actually, because we had one station that apologized to the viewers, one station that promised that would never use VNRs again, and then every other station that's made a public comment has been along the lines of, well, this is no big deal, well, this was one mistake, this is one slip-up, you know, and they're really not taking any responsibility for this at all, and they're not, again, they're not living up to the public interest mandate that they have as stations that are allowed to use the public airwaves.
We're talking with Diane Farsetta of the Center for Media and Democracy. Her April 6th report, Fake TV News, Widespread and Undisclosed, can be read online at prwatch.org. What Diane Farsetta learned about the news industry and their lack of willingness to take responsibility for deceiving the public also applies to the team set up by Karen Hughes at the U.S. State Department. So I asked her to listen to a March NPR report where Steve Inskeep gains entry to the Rapid Response Center of Karen Hughes, where words are constructed to be sent to government officials and embassy personnel who are about to be asked difficult questions about bad news stories that reflect badly on U.S. policies in places like Iraq. As you shall hear, there is discussion of how the center team will respond to a Time magazine story about U.S. soldiers killing civilians at Haditha and also lying about it.
One particular story that Arabs are seeing is of special interest to the State Department's Adam Erley. It started last November. That's when the U.S. said a roadside bomb killed civilians in Haditha, Iraq. Then, last week, Time magazine reported the civilians were really killed by American troops seeking revenge for the roadside bomb. The allegations got limited attention in the U.S. media. But the monitors here in the Rapid Response Center show that video of the bodies is now displayed on Al Arabiya.
There are two aspects to this whole process. One is, what are the problems we have to deal with? The second is, what do we say? You know, what's our message?
Which is what the people in the room at the State Department begin to hash out. Half a dozen people crowd around a computer screen.
We've got more messaging than this, don't we?
I'm trying to put in something that it's not so dry as... There's nothing there that says we regret the loss of civilian life, which we do always.
Yeah.
We can say that without...
Like, can we say we don't target civilians?
And we can say that, too.
So if this sounds a little like the war room in a presidential campaign, that may be no accident. The center was started by Karen Hughes, the former communications advisor to President Bush. Now she's the new top State Department official for what's called public diplomacy.
We do not target civilians. Any loss of civilian lives is regrettable.
She assigned a career diplomat named Duncan McGinnis to set up this office, sending information to top officials and to every U.S. embassy around the world.
The ambassador, for instance, in Cairo now has something. He's aware of this, so when he goes out today and he talks to Egyptians publicly and otherwise, he can actually say, let me reiterate that we don't target civilians, blah, blah, blah.
And might the ambassador in Cairo then be getting back to you through his staff by tomorrow to say, what you gave me to say was useless.
They
it's
do.
Really inadequate
they
to
do.
The anger over this?
They will say that. We had a problem when we had the secret prisons in Europe.
At first, the State Department had almost nothing to say about a Washington Post story that the U.S. was holding detainees overseas. On this story, the department again has limited information about how civilians were really killed in Haditha, Iraq. So as Duncan McGinnis types, a colleague hands him a printout of words that were used after another story.
That's what we had for a kind of a white phosphorus.
Oh, here we go. That's good. I like it. I like it. The loss of any innocent life is a tragedy.
Diane Farsetta, what do you make of this NPR report?
Well, what we would say as watchdogs of the public relations industry is what the State Department is practicing is crisis control, crisis communications. But, you know, what's absent in that story is that it is a crisis to a large degree of the U.S. government's own making. In terms of divorcing the actions, in this case, the actions of the U.S. military, from how they're being portrayed and what the implication is for the U.S. image. You know, it's a very legitimate concern to say, you know, we want U.S. actions to be understood around the world, but when you're engaging in occupations of foreign countries, when you're engaged in killing civilians, as we've seen time and time again, you know, the way to address that is not by repeating over and over again that the U.S. military doesn't target civilians. The way to deal with that is to end the occupation. The way to deal with that is to, you know, not enter into a war unless you absolutely need to for defensive purposes. What we've seen in just following Karen Hughes' career as the public diplomacy point person for the Bush administration, what we've seen time and time again, whether she's doing her listening tour of Middle Eastern countries or more recently she's been concentrating on Latin America, is that her message has really been rejected by foreign audiences because it's obviously spin and it's obviously divorced from the reality on the ground. And, you know, this just sounds like more of the same.
They said the words, "We do not target civilians," over and over again. This perhaps is just reminiscent of the typical propaganda style that they're using. But more to the point, though, they have no intention of modifying the rhetoric, and this reflects a policy that's been unchanging as well.
Well, that's right. That's right. And basically what they're trying to do is to have acceptance for policies that there's obvious very valid critiques of, both by people within the U.S. and, of course, people abroad who are being directly affected by U.S. military operations. This is not something that other administrations don't do. This is the reality of U.S. foreign policy and of public diplomacy, which we see as, you know, dressing up the term of public relations, you know, and selling a country as opposed to selling a brand. But, you know, all governments do this. All, of course, U.S. governments, Republican and Democratic, do this. The policies are based on obvious power interests, but they're always sold and explained in terms of democracy, human rights, concern for the little guy, when in reality, of course, there's a totally different calculus going on.
We did hear the term used, white phosphorus. This is what we said with that white phosphorus story. Oh, yes, we can use it again now that there is another atrocity being discussed, U.S. committed atrocity being discussed regarding Haditha. Where there's no sense of responsibility, of taking responsibility for what others call war crimes, one can hardly expect that there's going to be a sense of reality testing insofar as how people are going to actually receive this kind of press coverage and these kinds of talking points, frankly. It's almost like the reality of what has been created as propaganda has a life that's becoming increasingly separate from the thought processes of real Americans, real Iraqis, who have to deal with what has been created here. There used to be a term, pounding rubble into dust, when it came to the nuclear potential for our future and what it would hold. And now it almost seems like they're pounding the rubble of this propaganda to dust beyond the point of even the most remote credibility.
Well, one of the standard propaganda techniques is called the big lie. And it basically says, you know, if you repeat something over and over and over again, no matter how ridiculous it is, no matter how unsupported it is by the facts, you're going to get people believing in it because they've heard it over and over and over again. You just have perception management being the main concern. You have everything being run as though it were a campaign, everything with the political polls in mind. This is really, again, it's part of a long trajectory that both major parties have subscribed to when they're in office. But I would say, especially with this war, with regards to this war in Iraq, that those techniques are becoming worse in a way, that they're becoming more and more turned to and more divorced from reality.
Diane Forsetta, have you heard of this rapid response language elsewhere?
Right. Well, there actually just was a story that I saw about Karen Hughes focusing her public diplomacy more on Latin America. And, of course, one of the trends that we're seeing in Latin America is a rejection of the Washington, D.C. policies, of the economic policies. So you see more and more left leaders getting elected, of course, in Venezuela, in Cuba, in Chile, in so many other countries. So that concerns the United States. And so Karen Hughes last month did visit a number of Latin American countries. She's increasing aid to the area, and she's also using the Rapid Response Unit of the State Department to make sure that they know how the U.S. is being portrayed in these different countries. And I should say another reason why there's a greater focus these days on Latin America by Karen Hughes and other public diplomacy people is that recent polls are just seeing the U.S. government's credibility in Latin America going down. The most recent poll that I saw said 3 of every 5 Latin Americans now distrust the United States. And even if you look at the economic elites in Latin American countries, they still don't trust the U.S., which traditionally is the one community in which the U.S. has been trusted.
A lot of time and energy is being spent on this kind of self-promotion. People in the Bush administration are just really utilizing a lot of tax dollars, defending themselves and also propagandizing, right?
There have been some attempts to quantify this. I mean, if you look, the Government Accountability Office, which is a nonpartisan investigative arm of Congress, did a study about a year ago where they looked at the public relations spending in the first term of the Bush administration versus the second term of the Clinton administration. And they found that it had increased roughly twofold. So you do have this emphasis on PR, on spin, on the talking points. I mean, you could go into the whole leak issue of Scooter Libby being authorized to have some misleading cherry-picked information leaked from national intelligence estimates. You know, these are all attempts to present a certain image, to get support for policies that have already been decided upon, especially in terms of war. They've already been decided upon. There's a decreasing role, I would say, for real, genuine public debate and input on the most weighty decisions like going to war, where U.S. residents are literally going to be asked to risk their lives and even to die in this conflict. A few weeks ago, we had referenda in 32 different communities, and 24 of those voted in popular mandate to bring the troops home from Iraq now. You know, it's interesting that the split is happening between the spin that's coming out of Washington, D.C., and the reality is, as people are just realizing, you know, there's a old phrase, something like, you can't spin a pothole. You know, you can't tell people that their everyday reality is different than it actually is. You just lose credibility. And I think we are seeing a point now, especially with regards to the Iraq war, where the administration has lost a lot of credibility. And that's part of the reason why there is this focus on Rumsfeld. And, you know, in addition to the calls to impeach the president, there's calls to remove the Secretary of Defense.
Diane Forsetta is a senior researcher at the Center for Media and Democracy. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. Try WHUS.org to listen live Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or TalkNation.org and TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussions.